ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
No. Stop it. No, I am so suggestible. I need you to stop. I'm so suggestible that looking at the topic for today's What's That Rash, I started yawning without even thinking about it.
I'm seriously yawning, actually.
It's not preemptive boredom. It's actually fascinating. But we are, of course, talking about why yawning is contagious.
Because you're listening to What's That Rash?
It's the show where we answer the health questions everyone is asking. And this is a question that was asked at our recent live show at World Science Festival Brisbane.
This question's from Claire. What is
yawning? Well, you can pretend to be Claire now.
We've had
blokes before.
My name's Claire. What is yawning and why is it contagious, even between different species? I'm barely awake after watching a pine marten yawn.
We're all yawning because of the pine marten. So I would like for us to do a little bit of research throughout this chat. If you yawn at any point, can you just keep a tally? Just keep a tally of yawns. I will be keeping a tally of my own yawns as well. Even saying the word is making people yawn.
I can see
yawn.
Them.
I can
see. So starting, you're trying to stop yourself.
I see your yawn, sir. I see your yawn. What is yawning?
Are we so boring?
Yeah, exactly.
So yawn, the actual process is that it's an inhalation followed by a forceful stretching, because they call it mandibular gaping. And then an exhalation, a forceful exhalation. And that is, it's the technical term here is plesiomorphic. In other words, it crosses, just like handedness, it crosses species.
It crosses species, as we'll get to in a little bit, but obviously as evidenced by the pine marten there. The science of yawning is called chasmology, as in a yawning chasm. And I was like, okay, which came first, the chasm or the yawn? And I'm still not really sure. The word chasm actually comes from the Latin word for yawn and gaping. So I think maybe the yawn came first and then we named like chasms after it. And it comes from the same root as the word for chaos, as in the void, which yawning is very existential. It's very meta. In fact, it's something that happens to us even before we're born. My baby isn't even born yet. It's already bored of you, Norman.
Yeah. I know. What can I do? So those listening, what we were showing there was a video of a baby in the womb, a fetus in
the womb. Yawning, because Norman couldn't stop talking about the Mediterranean diet. But and it wasn't just random mouth movements either. So that was part of a study. Well, there has been studies done where they looked and they compared the random kind of mouth movements of babies in the womb and that sort of thing, and that's a real yawn. So why? Why do we yawn?
Well, an early theory was that this is a way of increasing the oxygenation of your blood.
That's so what I always thought it was.
Hold in, out it goes, and you've actually expanded your lungs. And or your carbon dioxide in your blood is getting too high, and when you want to get rid of carbon dioxide, you overbreathe, so you try and ventilate more. And when they've studied this and artificially raised the carbon dioxide in the blood, in the air, for example, you don't yawn more. So it doesn't seem to be related to oxygenation. The weird theory that seems to have lasted is brain cooling.
Brain cool. That sounds fake. Brain cooling.
So brain cooling. So it looks as though that the process, I know, go with me on this. I'm not sure I believe it either. But they have done research into this, that in some sense, that because you're doing this in the head and because you've got this rapid exhalation, that the brain gets cooled by the process of yawning. And they've cooled the brain and the animals stop yawning. And so if you actually look at animals, the bigger their brain, the longer their yawns, for example.
Okay.
Mammals have yawn more than birds.
So this is what I wanted to ask. How, we know that a pine marten can yawn. We know that humans yawn. It can be contagious in humans. How far back do you reckon yawning goes? Just throw me a species that you don't think yawns. Or not a species, like a...
Whales.
Whales are mammals. I think whales yawn. Actually, let's go to an aquatic setting. Let's have a look. Fish yawn. This is a vertebrate thing. That's how ancient it is. And it's been passed down to all of us from all the way back there. It's really, really, really old. And I still don't know why. And I don't know about that fish's
brain overheating.
Cooling. Does that mean that we yawn less in cold weather than in hot weather?
Very good question.
I don't know, science. This doesn't feel right to me.
No.
So, okay.
And animals seem to, when they look at animal behaviour and they look at when they yawn, they tend to yawn more when they're tense. You know, you don't want to be anthropomorphic about it. So when they're in a tense situation, when aggression is being expressed, there's yawning in one or other animal.
Okay. So why is it contagious then? So if we don't even know what causes it, why is there such a strong relationship between seeing someone else yawn and needing to yawn? I have been holding back yawns ever since we started talking about this.
So this is a fascinating area, and what it may be a symptom of is that we tend to mirror other people. We are a social species, and part of this is called the theory of mind. Now, the theory of mind is about social cognition, and it's about us recognizing ourselves as self and others as other. And there's a process in the brain called the default mode network.
Oh my gosh.
Which goes
okay.
up and down.
So I've got my Mediterranean diet bill, as you know. I've got my Pleiotropy xylophone that I never use anymore. I've got my fine particulate air pollution harmonica. Again, I don't use anymore because you stopped talking about it. Now I feel like I need a default mode network.
That thing. Oh, good.
Something like that.
Or what,
because
the duck
it's
thing.
Your favourite thing at the moment. You're talking about
my favorite
it constantly. Thing
so this
but for a recap for people who don't know what it is.
So this is the brain. This is the part of the brain that becomes active when you think your brain's resting. So your brain never rests. So parts of your brain go quiet and other parts of your brain become active and they start talking to each other. And it looks as though, thank you for your yawn, there are parts of your brain where when you're looking at somebody or an animal is looking at another animal, there are parts of your brain where the neurons in that part of your brain light up, and they particularly light up when this default mode network is active. And it's part of this empathy and connection and community that I want to be like you, or I want to imitate you, or I want to learn from you. So learning from other people happens in these particular areas of the brain, and they're called mirror neurons, where we look and we act accordingly. And it looks as though yawning, the contagion of yawning is those neurons in our brains where we learn how to be social beings, we learn how to respond to others, we recognize other as other, and we want to be empathic. Those are fired up with yawning and we imitate it.
It's funny. So I said, like, so many species yawn. We saw it in fish. We saw it in all sorts of different creatures. Contagious yawning doesn't seem to be as common as spontaneous yawning. So more social species have been observed catching yawns, like chimpanzees, baboons and dogs, but not necessarily a fish. So there's something about the socialness of a species that seems to come into play here.
Yeah.
It's actually really funny. So there's this guy who's like done all of the yawning research. I like to call him Professor Yawn. His name is actually Andrew Gallup. He's an evolutionary biologist at State University of New York Polytechnic Institute. And he says that when he first, because he's been studying this for years and years, and when he first started studying yawning, he was yawning all the time. So he's like, I was reading literature and writing notes and writing papers and found I was yawning all the time. But over time, I became habituated to the effects. I still yawn contagiously during social interactions, but seeing the stimuli that I use in the lab no longer produces the effect. So you can get like yawning tolerance, I guess?
Or yawning boredom?
Yawning boredom. So to summarise for Claire, why is a yawn contagious?
Because we're mirroring other people and we want to copy you. We want to learn from you. It's part of you being a social being.
Well, big yawn and stretch to celebrate that one. Oh, come on, everyone, you can do it. Oh, all right. Well, how many yawns did we get across the room? Can you chuck? How do we do this? If you yawned once during the discussion, once or more during the discussion, chuck your hand up.
My God.
That's like 2/3 of the room easily. If you yawned more than twice, keep your hand up. Someone
almost
put their
Almost the same number.
Anyone who yawned once or more. So we've got greater than one yawn. Yes. All right. Put your hand down if you only yawned once. Put your hand down if you only yawned twice. Three times. People still got their hands in the air. Four times. Okay. All right. We're kind of tapering off now. We've got like a nice little bell curve happening. Five times. Six times. Who's still asleep? Nine yawns. Who can do better than nine? How many yawns? Stop it. 12. Oh my gosh. 12.
God, we've got some social beings in this room.
I'm sorry, I guess. It feels like an indictment on us, Norman. Did anyone yawn zero times? Well-cooled brains in the house.
Okay. We weren't hot enough.
Well, as promised, it's mailbag time now. Normally, people would go to all the trouble of sending us an email asking their questions. Shelby would copy it over for us and we'd answer it. It's much, much easier today. All you have to do is stick your hand in the air. Someone will come around to you with a microphone. We would love to answer your questions live this morning. And when I say we, I mean Norman would love to answer your questions this afternoon. Please put your hand in the air if you have a question you would like Norman to answer.
Sorry, I don't know.
All right, here's the microphone.
Norman, I read a study about grip strength and dementia, and I think it's those that have poor grip strength can have increased incidence of dementia, and I became interested in that study, and one of you knew of that study or anything like that? We've got a friend she's Greek, she's 88, her grip strength is amazing, and she's bloody sharp as, and anyway, there's a life study right there.
Yes. It's not just one study, it's multiple studies showing, and so people use grip strength, they use it now actually as a proxy for measuring your risk of dementia or your risk of frailty, probably more than your risk of dementia. And it's still out for debate as to, so does that mean then you don't need to go and exercise and you just exercise your grip strength? And there's no evidence that just exercising your forearm, it'd be great if you could, changes something in your brain. It's a proxy for your general fitness and well-being, almost certainly. Now, people argue about this. There are people who think, and not mad people, people who research this area, they think there is something about grip strength itself. But it's just hard. It doesn't make sense, really. I mean, I suppose pickle juice at the back of your throat doesn't make sense either. But it's a proxy for your general for your risk of general frailty and your general physical and muscle well-being. That if you've got good strong muscles in your forearm, it's likely you've got good strong muscles elsewhere. And and if it means that you go off and do chin-ups at the gym when you're 85 years old, good on you.
So we actually got an in real-time follow-up to that question in the audience from someone who'd had a heart attack and was told to improve his grip strength.
About 10 years ago, and one of the things that they always said was important was you had to improve your grip strength because of the heart attack, and that's going to improve your heart muscle and everything like that. Are you basically saying that could be not right in looking at from that aspect?
I would say it'd be insufficient.
Yeah. Is this really interesting? Because it came from a cardiologist, of all people.
Yeah, I remember doing a session with a few hundred cardiologists in the room about cardiac rehab and what proportion of people sent people off for cardiac rehab, and it was very low. It's changed, but it's very low. I mean, cardiac rehab is not about grip strength. Cardiac rehab is getting on the bike. It's about changing your diet. No, I'm not going to say it. And losing a bit of weight and so on, toning your body up. It's not about grip strength.
Well, we are fresh out of time. Thank you all so much for coming along today. It has been an absolute delight.
So we had even more responses to our right versus left-handedness episode that we just have to share. Alex says, I was born left-handed in 1946 in South India. Had I grown up in the South, I probably would have remained left-handed because South Indians were pretty relaxed about these things. But as my dad was in the Air Force, he was transferred all over the country, and most of his postings during my early childhood were in North India, where left-handedness was frowned upon. Alex says, I was often beaten at school, although by those who looked after me as a small child. I was forced to become a right-handed writer. However, I do everything else with my left hand, combing my hair, brushing my teeth, using tools. I'm also left-handed at sports. I bat left-handed at cricket and I kick balls with my left foot.
Isn't that interesting?
So I thought that too. I thought this is really interesting. But Alex goes on to say about engineering. So this is really interesting. Alex says, I had some awful experiences while studying engineering. Have you noticed, I think this is directed at me as a fellow left-hander, nearly all machine tools, lathes, milling machines, drill presses, etc., have controls positioned for the convenience of right-handers. It's quite difficult for a left-handed person to safely operate most machine tools. It takes a lot of practice and effort. I nearly failed my engineering workshop practicals because I was so slow. It is interesting, like so many machines are built for safety.
That's right.
But if the safety is, yeah.
That was exactly what I was thinking, you know, the inherent danger.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, I'm not super into building stuff with heavy machinery, but I'm thinking about where the handles are on the, I'm moving my hands as I say this, on the different machines that I used when I was doing like shop classes at school and stuff. And yeah, my memory is, I'm holding my right hand above my head. I'm pretty sure they were right-handed tools.
And then Mandy has written in on this.
So Mandy, so I did some etymology in our left-handed, right-handed chat on a previous WhatsApp rash. Anyway, Mandy is giving us a Russian vocabulary lesson. And watch me mispronounce these words. Mandy says in Russian, it is pravi and levi. Pravi is part of a big family. Pravo is a right. Pravda is truth.
Named after your famous newspaper in the Soviet Union.
Ah, okay. And pravilny is correct. So these are all right. And then in levi, if you do or obtain anything na levo on the left, it is definitely dodgy. So the bias persists.
So Paul writes, our discussion reminded him of his first day as a dental student at the university, when one of the lecturers asked the left-handers to present their hand, and there were 7 out of 50. And then he proceeded to tell them to consider picking up the dental handpiece with their right hand and resist the urge to use their left hand right from the start, because the dental world is generally right-handed. Dental chairs are designed for right-handed dentists, and dental assistants are trained to sit on the left side of the chair. Of the 7, only 3 were successful in changing to the right, and 4 couldn't, so remained left-handed dentists. Interesting. A bit unfair for the lefties.
I've never thought about that. Of course, dental chairs are very, you're really forced to use one hand. And some dental surgeries, the way they're set up, you can't really access the other side of the chair even if you wanted to. Mm. It's a rough world out there for us left-handed, Norman.
It is. Well, a rough world for these patients of left-handed dentists. I'm going to take a closer look next time. And next time is next week. See you then.
See you then.